Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Chasing Edges podcast. I'm your host, Brian Peters. Got the boy on, an absolute beast today, Zach Boren, former Ohio State fullback and captain. Went on to do a couple off seasons in the NFL with the Houston Texans, San Diego Chargers, and the Tennessee Titans, where he now resides in Columbus as the president of Boren Brothers, where you can find him currently. But he has a tremendous history of leadership, both on and off the field, through college and now into the professional world. And that's what we focus on today. A lot of leadership tactics and a lot of lessons that he pulled from both Urban Meyer and Jim Tressel. Very fun episode. The boys obviously are pretty familiar with each other, but we go down all the rabbit holes of communication from inside a business to inside a team, peer to peer. And there's a lot of nuggets in there. So hope you enjoy.
Boom. Z, thanks for joining me.
Of course, man. It's been a long time.
Yeah,
I know. We haven't jumped on, but now we're finally doing this thing.
Yeah, long overdue to get like a full backstory and perspective. And then for those of you listening, we got another segment coming out where me, Zach, Nate, and then I'll rotate the guests that I have on that are available. But we'll have we're doing some kind of a little question and answer, maybe a
like
fire.
21 questions when you start dating someone.
Yeah,
you know? It's like that.
But it's like it gives you some good questions for anybody listening to think about how you want to process it. But you'll get it when you hear this section. We'll find a better name for it.
I don't even know if we have a name for it yet.
I was going Fire Away or Question Master or something like that. But we used to do something on with Mind Strong stuff. We called it Coffee Buzz, but I think we might do like Fire Away Friday.
Yeah. I like that.
Getting closer, yeah. Or like maybe a lottery effect, because I basically have a list of 120 numbers with questions. So I have 120 mm-hmm. questions that are pretty out there thinking questions to some extent. Some are dictated more towards sports and leadership in life, but then I have the guests pick a number, and then everybody fires away.
We need to add some questions at some point.
Oh, yeah.
And 120 will be picked through quickly.
Yeah, and it's funny. I had Laura and then one of her friends, AJ, on when I was in Montana. And like some of the questions are tough, and it's like hard to like get good responses. So then it's like, okay, so we ended up doing like 8 questions on that one. And then we got like 5 each time. But
we did.
Anyway.
But some are tough.
Yeah,
you're right. Some are really hard.
And yeah, but they're good thinking questions. And the concept behind it is more dictated on like how I coach is like, in essence, like your brain's more of like it keeps information that keeps you alive and deletes all the other 99% of the information it takes in besides what you ask questions about.
Right.
And then I always push everybody to journal and ask themselves why they're doing this or why they're perturbed or whatever. So anything with questions, I'm a big fan of. But
well, you never ask yourself why you do something, right? It's always you act, you do it, and then you don't think twice about it. And so even going through some of those questions that we have so far, it's like, you never think to yourself when you're on your own, unless you're in an atmosphere like that, but really those deep questions that you have to come up with answers on.
Yeah.
You know? So it's actually a cool concept and makes you think outside the box, and then obviously takes you back to some of the decisions that you've made throughout your life and makes you think like, why did I make those decisions?
Well, just like people, like it is really easy to get in the habit of things where it's like, okay, this is what I do. It's because this is why I do it. Or people just start to identify with those habits. Like, oh, I'm always the late guy, or I'm always the messy guy, which I fall into the category of sometimes, where it's just like, okay, can we change our mental framework? And I use the cold for that, where like people have this like fear or anxiety around getting in cold water, or like who knows when it's the framework started, when it was like, okay, my mom said if I go outside without a hat and gloves, I'm going to get sick. No, that's wrong. So we got to redo that framework. But I had a, because this might come out before Brian McKenzie's episode, but I have Brian McKenzie on and we talk about that, where he changed up his framework. So he set the challenge to himself to drive the speed limit at all times. And
that's actually a great one.
Yeah. And it's like, because it kind of gets you into like, so like, because most of the time in the car, like I rush everywhere and like I'm more or less like anxious when I'm driving because I'm like passing people and I'm doing all these other things. But in essence, like, if you want to, are you there to like get through it, or are you there to enjoy the experience? So no matter what it is, the mundane nature of driving or whatever else you're taking, again, you're rushing through or whatever job. So he kind of applied it to his whole life, where like now, instead of like, again, being anxious for that 100% of the drive, now he's saving energy. And then like other areas of life, like if you just, there's a concept in like sports coaching and effort and sprinting and things like that too. It's like the 85% rule. where like if you run a 400 meter dash at 85% the whole time, you actually have a better time than when you like gas out and go. So just like if you keep this, it's kind of like playing at 7 out of 10 and then being amped up at 10 out of 10. It's like, okay, what's my level of like optimal performance that I can sustain?
What would yours be? Think about in the real world, like what would be your thing that like you said that you always catch yourself doing, but if you were to dial it back, it actually, you know, have a whole kind of whole different meaning.
I think driving would be definitely up there, because that's, I know for a fact after he said that, I got triggered. I was like, oh, like I super anxious when I drive, and then like I always like I'm rushing to get places. And I'd say more or less my concept of that is that like I mistake like activity with achievement. Like I like busy, like I gotta be busy, because like I do have a lot of free time if I want it, but like I feel I get guilty when I like am not using all my time, or I'm not learning, or I'm not networking or doing something. So it's just like, okay, I don't have to be on all the time. I can check in, work really hard, then check out hard, and like and like do things that I know for sure calm me down. What about you?
That's a great one that you just said that was going through. But honestly, my number one would be sitting right here in front of me, my phone. And I think it's one of those things, because I do so much work on my phone that, you know, it's, you know, I've got my most 90% of my staff shows up at 3 a.m. in the morning. So by the time I wake up from, you know, 3 a.m. till 5 p.m., everything's on my phone. And so I do so much that when I get home from work, it's like I'm always on my phone, because I think that's just that's when I feel like I'm productive, right? It's like if I'm not on my phone, I don't feel like I'm being productive. I don't feel like I'm doing those things. And so then I catch myself after 5 p.m. just checking my email randomly. I'm like, why did I check my email at 6 o'clock and then 6:05 or 6:10, 5-10 minutes later, I'm checking it again? Like, you don't need to check your email. Or then it turns into me going on social media, because I think, you know, that's where I'm educating myself and that's where I'm looking things up. And I feel like my mind is on when I'm on my phone, and that's totally not the case, and I need to be able to dial it back.
And that's almost like a gatekeeper, because it's really like, it's kind of like when you set up your environment for success, it's like me not wanting to watch like Netflix in my downtime. I hide the remote, like it's in the top level of my pantry, where it's like I have to go out of my way to get to it. And again, I can think through my decision longer. So you said, or it's like buying a bunch of healthy food, where like if I only have healthy food in the house, I won't eat like dog shit, you know, in that realm. Like, but like the more you're on your phone, the easier it is just like click over to Instagram, you know.
No doubt. And then I find myself when I wake up in the morning, what's the very first thing I do? Instead of, you know, turning it over and kissing my wife or whatever, I jump on my phone. And but, like that's just what I do when I go to bed. What do I do? I look at my phone, you know. So it's like,
yeah, well, it's also like you, like again, your environment, like obviously it's your line of work. Where Zach is the, are you technically CEO or like
president
of Bourne Brothers here in town, where like his work starts at 3 a.m. And so like even whenever you wake up, I mean, you wake up early, you have that good habit of working out in the morning, but you're also playing catch up immediately.
Correct.
So it's even like you're playing catch up to go like to your release of working out. And then after that, you're still playing catch up probably until you get to the office. And it's just like, it's just a good time to like question your environment, or like even like when I work with business folks, it's like in essence, like how do I get ahead of the problem? Where like I have a client where he, she, at night, like work was bleeding into the evening and affecting the person's personal life in that realm. Like, so, okay, can we put boundaries on like basically like we color coded the warnings, or like what's able to break that night barrier of whatever time allotted and that kind of thing. So it's like, okay, how can I at least improve this area? Like, and so can you do stuff the night before to prevent the morning? Or like even now you start talking about delegating and trusting the team, but all that stuff intrigues
me. Well, that's the bad cycle that I get into, because like I said, most of my team starts at 3 a.m. And so by the time I get up, you're right, I'm playing catch up. But you know, during the workout hours of the morning, whenever that is, that's kind of the meat of the day. You know, guys are 3 hours into the day and you're in the meat of their day. But the issue is on the client side, which I spend a lot of time on as well, you know, those client hours are 8 a.m. till 6 p.m. Some, I've got clients on the West Coast that it bleeds into, you know, 8 p.m., 9 p.m. Eastern. And so the issue is my team starts early. The client side of things turns into middle of the day, technically of a normal work day, to the evening. And so then I get in this bad cycle of morning, then throughout the day. And then what happens is I get so busy that I still want to be in glue, or I still want to be in tune with the outside world. And in my mind, that's getting on Twitter, that's getting on these things, that's reading articles. You know, I still do some sports media stuff, so I want to be in tune with what's going on in the sports world. And so then that turns into the night. It's just a really bad cycle.
Well, yeah, you can look at it a bunch of different ways where, like, again, like some of that's required. And then also, sure, like there's also like multiple ways to skin a cat too, when you start looking at business strategies. And even throughout the test of history, where, like, I think it was Napoleon Bonaparte, like when it came to like military correspondence, like unless it was like on the battlefield he was on, he wouldn't even have his like secretary or whatever the postal guy was called open the mail for 3 days, because in essence he would hope the problem would solve itself by the time he got to it, and that would limit his energy exertion.
Which Napoleon.
Yeah,
look at that.
Yeah, but I think that, but it's a cool concept where, like, sometimes
super cool.
Where sometimes, like, again, it's like, what are we not? If you keep asking questions and you keep looking for help, and that's why, like, everybody should always keep a mentor and a coach, where it's like, who can always question my framework and prove me, like, what books can I read, whatever. And then now you get into the, even the structure of your environment is like, how often is your phone available? And, and like I know, like, a lot of that's required, and like my perspective and my lens there is different, but like, I didn't realize how addicted I was to my phone till I went out in the backwoods with Laura. And
you've
like,
told me that,
so. Yeah. And I just reached for my phone constantly. And then eventually, like, you just, the body lets go. You kind of, like, even like, you kind of just feel a little more relaxed when I kept my map on there. My first trip out there, I didn't have my map, so I stopped bringing my phone initially on that first trip. But in that realm, it was freeing, but it's also, okay, how can, when I got back into the real world, into the matrix, as I call it, but how can I limit this? How can I create better habits? And it's like, you should ask that about everything. And like, even with like your wife, even with your parents, like all those things, can you always like improve that system?
Well, you brought up a great point, because how do you break the habit? What are you doing? It started so much of when I woke up and I saw a problem that I would dive into it right away with work. And obviously I've got a management team in place. I've got an operations team in place that should be handling those things. It's just, as a football player since the age of 5, doing the things that you and I have been really fortunate enough to do, what have you always done? You've always been responsible for yourself, right? How hard do you work out? What do you do in your off time during the season? There's so many things that you have control over. And it was always like, I'm the one who could push the envelope and move the needle in the right direction. And when I transitioned to the business world, I quickly realized that I was trying to do that. Even though I hired someone to do these certain things, it's always like, I wanted to be that person. I wanted to move the needle. I wanted to make sure that there was a sense of urgency. It kind of went back to my football training days. And so a habit that I've picked up is, you know, I'll look at my phone, but I've kind of stopped responding, and I let them figure it out. And then by the time I get into the office, if things aren't figured out, there's a question on why hasn't it? Yeah. Because there should be a sense of urgency and people should be making decisions. Or two, if it's something that's higher level that needs to come up to me, then I'll make the decision then. But yeah, it's funny you bring that up, because it took a while. And that, I think that's one of the hardest things from an athlete going into the real world, is realizing you can't control everything when for so long you've been able to control yourself, and your body is what makes you successful in sports, right?
Yeah. It's
your
mindset. It's like a transition of business, because like eventually, like in pro sports and college sports and all those things, like you are your own business. And like, right, your body is like your means of income or your means of production, whatever it ends up being. And it's kind of like a double-edged sword, where like they tell you, like, control what you can. And then now you get in control of a team. And like, it's kind of like a paradox of leadership, where like, in essence, like one of my favorite definitions of leadership is being held accountable for things outside of your control. And that's a really cool view of leadership, because it's like same as like the coach falling on a sword when the team has a bad game. Like, yeah, the players didn't execute to some extent, potentially, whatever, if it was a schematic problem. But in that realm, like, you always want to take responsibility. But in essence, like, you can never control what everybody does. You can only respond, create environment, systems, communication, things like that. But it's just like, it's kind of, that's a weird transition, because again, like, it's what's a good way to say it? The approach to leadership has to change. And it's like, it's almost like, so it's like the what's called the Icarus paradox, where what got you there won't keep you there, because like Icarus got to the sun, but it melted, you know, his wings melted and he fell back to earth. So in that realm, same thing in NFL, same thing in college football, the same thing that makes you a starter might not keep you there. But the same thing that made you successful in football might not keep you successful in business, you know?
Correct. But the other thing that I think people fail to bring up in leadership on a business perspective, compare or opposite of football or even any kind of sport, is in football and sport, you have your team. You're not changing it. You're not the GM. If you are a player and you are the leader of the team, you have to lead with what you have.
Yeah, it's more peer-to-peer leadership.
Correct.
Yeah.
On the flip side, on business, which this took time for me to figure out, and I think I still am figuring it out, but I've come a long way from where I was, is part of leadership is making sure you have the right people on your team.
Yeah.
There might be great employees that you think will make your team very successful and will do a lot of great things for you, but they might not always be the great fit. And as a leader, your job in the business world isn't to put square employees in peg holes, right? Even though they might have the best resume in the world, they might have so much experience doing certain things, that doesn't mean they're always the right fit. So as a leader in the business world, you always have to keep on monitoring your team and seeing the dynamic and seeing how people work and whether they work good as a team individually, because they have to be able to do both in the business world. You got to make decisions. Are they the right person for my team or not? Because I'll be honest, I've fired a lot of great employees. Like, there's been great employees that they walk into any door and they're going right to the top of the line on the resume list. They're getting a big offer, but they weren't the right fit for our team.
Yeah, that's super interesting, because I've come across this a little bit in that realm, where this probably isn't the most accurate example, but it's like I talked with the CEO of Strong Coffee and Adam von Rothfelder, and he created the point where, in essence, like, who you think is going to be your first client is sometimes your last. And so, like, you think, like, he was referencing a gym or like even his coffee, where it's just like, these guys, like, you think your friends would be the first there to support you or try the product and stuff. But like, even now you start talking about the skill set, the transfer from like the difference between football and the business world's different. Like, a lot of the tools carry over. But in that realm, like, when I was coaching business folks, I was like, okay, like, I know these pillars of work ethic and they need to apply in this realm. And that was this like square peg round hole concept, when really, like, some different intricacies in the skill sets that, again, they might be a great human with great work ethic, but like, they're not this fit for the job because they don't have the nuance, the communication skills or negotiation strategies, or even like the IQ to fix whatever.
Yes. I mean, 100% agree with you. And we could go down a rabbit hole on how there's great people in this world, but they're not the best fit for everything. Right. I'm sure you'll be honest with yourself as well. There's a lot of things that I think I do successfully and I'm able to do, but at the same time, I'll tell you, there's certain things I'm not great at doing, you know? And so I'm not going to act like I'm that person. And so, but I also think that's part of leadership, when you start talking or start kind of having self-talks with yourself on, what am I good at? What aren't I good at? Where do I need to surround myself with better people? Where can I pick up some of the slack? And so, like, that's something that I've worked into the leadership style of business, of not only making decisions on who's right for what positions, no matter what their resume is, it more so when the bullets start flying, how do they respond to things, but also where do I need to surround myself with those kinds of people? You know, I know I'm great with networking and sales. Why am I going to surround myself with a high volume salesperson when I'm good at those things, right? Yeah. I know I'm not a good operations manager, and I know I'm not great at operations. And so as a leader, you can't have the mindset that I'm great at everything and I have got every answer. That's part of leadership as well in business, is realizing I don't know everything. I'm going to try to keep on learning and bettering myself, but I can't act like I know everything.
Yeah. And that's where, like, self-awareness is a superpower. And like, you got to know what you're good at. You got to be able to fill deficiencies. And then, like, even if you, there's a couple cool models on it where, like, and that, like, you need self-awareness through the whole process, the growth process, the scaling process, the sustainability process, all the above. But like, if you can't again, like, and that, this is where, like, I can control what I can control in that realm where it's like, okay, I know what I'm good at, I know what I'm bad at, and I always check in with that. And then, like, because, like, time's a variable, every time you add another person to the equation or another hire, like, you're like, you need to reevaluate the system. Yeah. And but like, it is cool where like self-awareness is massive, and it's just like, because now you don't want to have any redundancies, you don't want to waste energy, you want to be efficient as possible in the business world, because again, now you start talking overhead, and then time, just time's money, time's value. But anyways, besides, like, I love that conversation, because it applies. And like, me and Zach have actually spoke on leadership together. Mm-hmm. To what is it, Ohio State's leadership class?
Yeah,
which was super fun.
It may have been, was it Fisher College of Business?
I don't know. That sounds cooler. We'll go with that.
It was in the business school.
Yeah. But you spent some time, you went in, like, I don't know if you were like an adjunct professor or whatever, but you coached and taught with Urban, right? In his leadership class. What was your role there?
I think that I love Urban. You know, him and I are still really close. I know he's got a bad rap, maybe out in the public eye, but behind closed doors, he is one of the best leaders I have ever been around. And I think from his standpoint, it goes back to the self-awareness of there's certain things that Urban knows he can teach on, and certain things where he wants to bring someone with some experience. And so that's where I got brought in, just because of he wanted someone to be the ground level. You know, Urban's always been that CEO, run a program, build a program, higher level type of person. And he's never been kind of where the bullets are flying. And so he brought me in to give my perspective on what it was like to be a leader within the team and kind of lead from the front. And I love the military. You and I talk about the military all the time. Those are guys I idolize. But it's essentially the analogy of, you know, the general who's making the calls from base compared to the leader of the battalion or whatever it is that's making the calls out, you know, on the mountainside or in the middle of the battle. And so that's why he brought me in, because he wanted that class and that leadership class to get the different kinds of leadership styles and kind of different situations you're put in as a leader, from when the bullets are flying to where you're looking at things from a higher level. And it was really cool. Yeah. I mean, Urban taught me so much from a leadership standpoint, just because he is someone that feels so strongly about trusting yourself, making a decision and going with it in the sense of urgency. And I mean, so much that I learned from him in that 1 year when I played for him, I've transitioned into the real life and into the business world. And it's just really cool the way he teaches.
Well, I like that approach in general anyways, because I say this a lot when I like look at the makeup of a team, and in the NFL in particular, like, you don't just have all rookies and all like all-stars. You don't spend, like, some teams kind of build their roster like that sometimes, where in essence, you don't have any of these stepping stones in between this super high level, like we'll say JJ Watt and like a undrafted rookie. You want to know that there's these second contract guys or these 8-year guys somewhere in between there that maybe wouldn't have been superstar, but you have more like stepping stones to success, where it's not this massive gap. And you're talking about a similar gap in leadership, where it's like, yeah, you need somebody on the field making the calls, and then you also need like the guy playing chess from the tower too, but that's awareness. Like, that's a good awareness tactic for him to pull in, again, like a bullets or flying guy, and then coach accordingly.
Well, especially when you're teaching those students, then who's to say that they're going to be running a Fortune 500 company from the top, right? Yeah. They might be the head of a department. They might be in different situations where they have to lead a team, but it's more so the day-to-day stuff where the bullets are flying, and more so a real world example compared to sitting at the top of, you know, a massive company or CEO, president, whatever it might be, and look at things from the top down.
Yeah. And, but like, that's, but again, that's sharp. And then if I was a student sitting in the class, like, yeah, it's easy to hear Urban talk about all these things, and he has 20, 30 years of experience, maybe, when like now you, who just like just out of football, like that kind of thing, where you're still very tied to those like decisions, and even like the leading your peers at that age is way different than like leading your peers as a 50-year-old or leading a team. So I think that's cool awareness. I still haven't read his book. I know you're kind of peppered all over the book, but as far as like his, like what are some of the leadership tactics that you learned from him, or like one of his coaching styles you admire, things like that, like on the field?
Yeah, you know, I think first and foremost, Urban is one of those guys that leading within your peers, I think, is one of the hardest things to do. And that's where people struggle the most. It's, I'm around my buddies, I'm around people that are of my status. How do I elevate myself and how do I lead them? How do I have tough conversations? And being kind of working with Urban, especially when he first got there, you know, 2012, we had a wasted year. We were bowl banned. We couldn't do anything. Couldn't go to the Big Ten Championship. And so we spent a lot of time of kind of molding what he wanted the program to be. And so it's one of those things from him is that I learned what it's like to be a leader within your peers. I learned what it's like to even one of my best friends off the field, but on the field, how do you have those tough conversations? How do you talk to people? How do you motivate them to do something without just coming off like, hey, bro, like, you know, hey, do this. You know, how do you really separate the friendship and the leadership when you cross the line? And working with him and seeing the way that he was able to lead his coaching staff, able to lead people that he was very fond of as well from a peer standpoint, that's invaluable. You know, and it's easy to be put in on a pedestal and say you're the leader and that you've got all these people below you, right? And you tell them what to do and move the chess pieces. It's harder to be on the same playing field as someone and be a peer and then elevate yourself internally to be able to lead the team and kind of get those messages across and accomplish a mission. And so that was my biggest thing from him. But everything about him, he was so intense, sense of urgency.
Yeah, what's his concept? It's not hold the standard, it's the line.
Yeah, it was
above the line.
Not above the line. I'm totally forgetting his catchphrase.
It's one of the, it's like the title of the book too, isn't it?
It is. It's a the chase. Well, he always had the chase, but there was something about it. But you know, Urban's thing was you have to do things 10,000 times before you master it.
Yeah.
So he was always, you know, he didn't think practice, and he was one of those guys that would constantly say, he'd have the Michael Jordan thought process of, I'm going to make practice so hard that come Saturdays, games are easy. And that was his mantra. That's what he wanted to do. And so he called Tuesday Bloody Tuesday because it was ones versus ones. It didn't matter if it was, you know, week 11 or week 12 of the season. It was ones on ones. You were getting after it. Tuesday was going to be a tough ass practice and you were going to compete. And so then you got to the game on Saturday thinking, hey, Ohio State, whatever it might be, ones on ones. You get to the game on Saturday, you're not going to be facing competition that's that good. Or and so his whole demeanor of, I'm going to put you guys in so many situations that you, competitive excellence was his big thing, that you, when push comes to shove, when it's time to show out, guess what? You're going to show out because you've had so many reps of doing things the right way. You've had so many reps of fighting and clawing to be successful that when push comes to shove, we're going to be on the winning side most of the time. And that's what I loved about him is just the intensity and the, he was scared of failure. And that's a hard thing. Everyone says they don't want to fail, but if you're scared to fail, that just elevates things even more. And granted, I think it was his downfall because obviously from his health issues, he was stressing all the time. And there's a happy medium, as we just talked about to start this podcast, is you got to be able to turn it off and on a little bit. But he was so scared to fail that's why he was so successful, because he was constantly pushing the envelope, constantly pushing guys to get better, constantly working people. It was being in his program for a year was just eye-opening.
I like that a lot. Well, I just like the practice concept because I really like Michael Jordan's philosophy, and he, like, I've watched some documentaries and I chased down some rabbit holes because I do all the quotes and stuff too, where like one of his things that just keeps showing up is, I took pride in the way I practiced, and like, I want to make practice harder than the game so that like I know end of the game, like I have the edge, whatever, X, Y, and Z. And like, so obviously like transitioning that makes a lot of sense. And like, I get into like the physiology world of what I coach. And it's like, okay, as long as you can like take care and like the people can recover, like the Ferrari can race on Saturday. And in essence, like, yeah, okay, we'll have our Bloody Tuesday. We'll have Warrior Wednesday. We'll have like Thirst Trap Thursday. I don't know, whatever. Yeah, but in that realm, like you can create the system. And like, cause in essence, like I think it's also like a comfort with stress. And like, again, and at Ohio State, it's going to be a lot of NFL products facing each other. And I had this stud on Jesse Williams, who was, I think, two-time national champ at Alabama. And that's why I want to talk to you about like Urban and Tress a little bit, because he breaks down Saban's philosophy. And the practice was such a focus, like every sprint was a focus, and how you started every set of sprints was a focus. And I just posted a quote the other day where it's like, run hard when it gets hard to run is a real thing, because yeah, like that's a separator, and like how you approach the run is like, and so in essence, like this level of practice basically increases your stress tolerance. And like in my world, that's like your CO2 tolerance too. But if your stress tolerance is really high, then now there's less emotional response in the game, and you start programming these guys to be elite day in and day out. And like, that's why I think like the hard coaching, as much as it gets a bad rap now, I think is still necessary in the game of football. And I just know myself where I always responded to hard coaching. And I like, I'm a nice person where like I'll talk to any nice coach and I can get coached up really well. But like, I'm a guy that needs more stick than carrot, in essence.
Yeah, well, I think hard coaching has to be around. I don't think that can ever go away. Granted, I hate the way that the younger generation is pushing more towards getting away from that and want it to be nice coaching all the time. But it goes back to what you were saying, and as you were talking, it's, you know, if you are going through the motions or going through walkthroughs during the week at practice, and next thing you know, you get to game day Saturday for college football, or even Sunday in NFL football, there's multiple things that happen. When the fans are there, when the lights come on, your heart rate elevates anyways. Everyone talks about, you know, you get the juice. Well, what happens is when your heart rate starts fluttering and things start moving really fast and you're not used to seeing them, and you see them once a week on game day, next thing you know, you're a step short. Next thing you know, you second guess yourself. Next thing you know, you injure yourself because you're not used to things moving that fast, and you go to turn and whatever it might be.
Yeah.
When you're used to the bullets flying on Tuesday and you are put in situations where your heart rate is elevated and there's competition and hooting and hollering and things are moving really, really fast, when you get to Saturday, things are going to slow down. You get in that standpoint when it gets to the second half and guys, you know, we've seen it, sweat coming down their face, snot coming out of their nostrils, right? How do guys respond? A lot of times, guys go into survival mode. Hey, I haven't been in this situation. Man, I just need to survive. Compared to if you're practicing really hard and you go through that on Tuesday, you're going to get to Saturday and be like, this is where I thrive. You know, you look across and that's when you're like, I know this guy's defeated because I've been through this 10,000 times and I've seen it, I've done it. I know what competitive excellence is. I'm going to win this rep. And next you know, it turns into a big play. Next you know, when guys are going in survival mode, you're sitting in there and kind of start thriving. You know, that's when the big players make big plays, because you've been there before. You know what it's like to succeed. And that was his huge kind of message, is that, you know, checkmate. When you look over in the second half and guys are struggling because they haven't been there, they haven't worked as hard, they haven't been through those competitive excellence reps, what's going to happen then? And then it's like, hey, checkmate, they're done, we win the game.
Yeah, that, like that's, in my eyes, like that's super logical. Like it makes a lot of sense to like, basically, like it's the same as like military, like they train their face off. Like you guys are training your face off, and in that realm, and like a quote I love on it is like if you're in a fair fight, you didn't prepare properly. Like the goal is to make it as lopsided as possible, and like that's where like, just because like when you, because for those of you listening, Zach was a fucking godsend for me when I was in the CFL. He got me in to train with Ohio State's NFL group, and I didn't have any money at the time. It was just like a massive, again, it changed the direction of like my training, and then like just my mindset being around you and Ebner and John and Corey and all the boys and Kurt Coleman and all those guys, where in that realm, I got a little peek behind the curtain. And like, obviously I knew Northwestern's ways, but you get in there and you understand the training and you understand whatever that bloody Valentine's Day and like all the Valentine's Day massacre or whatever. Oh, like, yeah. And then like your version of our winning edge, where like our hard training again is to, again, try and create an advantage because we go to a darker place and we're more comfortable in a darker place and the end of competition and things like that. And there's just like a whole nother level there where like that was new to me to see one, like the guys go through it, but also understand like what price are you willing to pay for success? Yep. And like that's a separator. And like, even like as a leader, Urban, like, how do I separate the winners from the losers on my team? How do I like, or the good from the great? And like, I think fire is the only way to do that. And so, for sure. Yeah, so I think that's a really cool tactic.
We had winner and loser every day. So during the entire off season, whatever that was in college, you know, 3-4 months of that winter conditioning going into spring ball, and then even a little bit in the summer after spring ball, you were on a team and you competed against someone every day from an opposite team. So during that week, it would be like, you know, your team versus my team. And there was someone from our team, you know, 1 through 10 or whatever, and yours 1 through 10. Someone from our team was matched up against you. It would be me versus you throughout the entire week. So whether it be in the weight room with pull-ups, whether it be during conditioning, whether it be, you know, we did a lot of agility drills, like where we do kind of do mat drills, but, you know, it was 3-cone. It was the star drill. It was going through bags. Everything was a competition, and they had someone with a clipboard literally keeping score. And so then at the end of the week, if it was, you know, 40 wins to 42 wins, I get the point. And then it's team versus team. And so you're getting into an atmosphere where you're pushing for other guys because you want them to be successful, and you're pushing one another while you're also competing every single time. So whether it be even, you know, the burnout set after a bench workout, it's not just, hey, you know, I'm going to get, you know, we've really been doing sets of 10. I'm going to do 13 and then I'm done because I've done 3 more than what I was doing. Instead, it pushes you into the mindset of how far can I go? You know, how much can I push my body to get the most out of it? And every little thing was a competition, which just elevated the entire program and elevated the team.
Yeah, it's it's kind of, it embodies the chasing edges mindset where like you're stacking that up. But when I view that now, because I'm trying to like, in essence, like, how do I influence a team with like what I coach? And like, now you get into physiology, and like the winner's effect is a real thing. And so like, obviously, so in essence, like basically like if you compete or gamble or you're on Wall Street or anything along these lines, like if you continue to like risk and win, like you get these dopamine hits, but like this leads to like higher testosterone. So like there's actually a bunch of physiological benefits to constantly winning. And then like when you constantly lose, you actually get worse effects to cortisol. So you actually, it drags you down and makes it harder to win again. And so I look at like, it again, like Ohio State is very, 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 very rarely on a losing streak. But in that realm, like Northwestern losing streak this year, in that realm, like how do you change? Like, can you, so in essence, like one of my thought patterns, and I don't know if you even think this is logical, but like create as many competitive situations to get your guys little wins throughout the week. And like start to rewire this physiology to be a separator again, or like, because like you hear in the world of like losing streaks and slumps in baseball and stuff, or like, I don't know how to, like, we just don't know how to win, and it's hard to like tangibilize that. But like in essence, like, I don't, you know how to hit the ball, you know how to, you can win a game, but it's just like, it's like you need this physiological reminder, you need all these other advantages that you can steal physiologically. But like in essence, like I think that part of that's what is getting programmed in, and that's why like, you also can't, like, as a coach, like, I can't, it's really hard to manage 110 guys. So, like, I should measure winning and losing. And because I think winning and losing in the world of sports is life and death. And, like, we that's where our physiology responds as to what we think is life and death.
There's one word that you're talking about right now, and it's a word that I love. It's culture. That's it. It's culture. When, you know, the losing streaks, the winning streaks, whatever, whether it be negative or positive, it's culture. And that's what makes or breaks your team. You know, in college football, you see it all the time. Why are, you know, the Alabamas, the Ohio States, the Clemsons, Georgias, teams like that, why are they always so successful? And it's because they have a really good culture. And once you get people encompassed in that and they buy in, it's hard to break. Now, on the flip side, you know, you look in the NFL and there's teams with great cultures. I mean, look what the Patriots did for a really long time, right? But, you know, the NFL is a little bit harder because there's money and guys are switching teams so much. So you're intermixing cultures. So that's where I believe in the NFL, the head coach is such a important position because that's what makes or breaks your culture every year, with so many guys coming in and out, going from a bad culture to a good culture. And how do you get them to buy in? I mean, you look at Vrabes, right? Yeah. Vrabes has been so successful at Tennessee ever since he's been there. And it's because he demands a good culture. He demands a different kind of culture compared to a lot of the other NFL coaches. But even into the business world, you know, how do you create a culture where people are winning? You know, if it's if you don't create any competition, or you don't create kind of winner loser from that standpoint, give thumbs up, thumbs down. How do you create that culture? Otherwise, they're just showing up every day, and it's just like, I'm just going to sit at my desk and clock in and clock out. You know, it also
gives the guys feedback, and it's like it's a feedback loop. And like now like it's like a variant of micromanaging, but it's like, just because it's scaled and tracked, you can again steer the ship that way and like steer it towards winning. And because some people build the environment. Like, I know some really good coaches that are very conscious of like what their players are doing in the locker room. And like, so some of these coaches, like, they put the ping pong table in, they put the bags, they put things like that. Cause like, in essence, like, you want the guys that compete and the guys that want to win. And then I talked about Nick Saban on the Jesse Williams podcast too. And like, that his standard was so hard on competitiveness. And then eventually he got the right guys in there, and then they continued to get the right elevation guys, where like, in practice, because everybody's a fucking winner, in essence, like, you can't take 5% off. Like, you gotta go hard every time. And then now the standard just gets ingrained. And then it gets passed on from senior to junior, then all the way to freshman. Then every incoming freshman, they know the standard is dog out at the beginning of sprints, go hard every rep in practice. And then now you don't have to coach that.
Culture's contagious.
Yeah.
It's a contagious thing, but that's why it's so powerful, because if your culture starts to go and it's negative, it can steamroll quickly, you know. And that's why, as a leader, that's where you always have to have your finger on the pulse. I talk about culture all the time to my team, and even when I'm talking to people, culture always gets brought up. And it's because, as the leader, you got to make sure, like you said, the head coaches are controlling what's going on in the locker room. That those coaches are the ones who know what can make or break you, you know. And so that's why it's so important to make sure guys that those things are getting ingrained with someone. Like you said, I love when you said Jesse Williams said you can't even take 5% off, because you know
you get your ass kicked, right?
You're gonna get your ass beat. And so that's just a culture thing. But, you know, we talk about Northwestern, and I have a lot of respect for, I really do. You know, we have some fun, but I have a lot of respect for Northwestern. But you're looking at what they did this year, and there's red flags. Like, how'd they go just from 2 years ago, I think, being in the Big Ten championship game, to now only winning one football game? It's like there's a disconnect somewhere in the culture. You can see how quickly it goes out of control.
Yeah, and like, and I like, I've tried to like break it down, and I talked to some of my teammates I played with too, and like, I don't think it's too different from the NFL either, where, like, as you said, like, a head coach is really important. I think we got that at Northwestern.
Yeah,
but now you start, okay, now, like, in the NFL, I think it's the same in college, where it's like, in essence, I'd say head coach is the hierarchy, quarterback, coordinators, and then culture. Like, I'm not saying culture is that low on the totem pole, because it's really all encompassing, like, coaches there. But in that realm, I think.
But it's the meat of your team. How does the meat of your team think?
Yeah. And like, but the meat, that culture aspect of it, like, it's like how to win and those kind of things. But if your culture and your standard isn't set in that respect, like, there's a lot of, like, and again, I'm in the sports psychology world too now, where it's these concepts of like drift to failure happen, really, where like you don't hit the standard, and then like, okay, it comes a little easier not to hit the standard. And eventually, like, this, again, this drift becomes harder and harder away from whatever the standard was that got you X initially. So it makes sense to like be, as a coach, or like as a, like, again, we're talking peer-to-peer leadership, who are also the gatekeepers of the culture.
For
like,
sure.
And yeah, and in that realm, like, you need to keep that environment dialed, or else, like, again, this drift can happen really quick.
Yeah. And it's harder to, it's kind of like the diet thing, you know. Yeah. It's easy to gain weight, but it's a lot harder to pull it off, you know, to lose it. And so it's harder to get that winning culture and get people to buy in and get the meat of your team to start having that mindset. But it's super easy to lose that culture. You get a couple bad apples in there. I call them cancers. You get a couple cancers in there, and yeah. you get some turnover of your peer leaders that have moved on, going to different teams in the NFL, that graduate from college, do any of those things. You know, in the business world, find a different job, whatever it might be, or you just add more people to your team in the business world, and you lose that separation between your peer leaders and then your true peers then, because those people got elevated in management positions. It makes things a lot harder.
Yeah, bad apple syndrome is real. And they've done like all these studies on it too to prove it, just because, and that's like kind of how drift to failure works too, where like if somebody who's new to the culture or just somebody else sees somebody cut a corner and they don't call it out, and then now it becomes easier for them to mimic that corner yeah. cut, so that eventually like it bleeds into this whole cancer concept of understanding like what is the standard. And so, but like that, but then like now, I heard another cool approach to leadership the other day, and it makes sense. It's like basically like, I think the definition is leadership, but leadership is the, or like the culture is the worst behavior you allow. And so now it's like, okay, what is the worst behavior? And like, what is the separator in football? And it's like, okay, it's like every practice rep, yeah. it's every sprint rep. And it's like, okay, what's, we know our standards, kind of like the weakest, like that you're only as strong as your weakest link. You're only as strong as your weakest action as a crew. And so,
but dude, it's even the gym reps in the winter, you know, yeah. it's what you do, when you have some spare hours in February after your workout. Are you just sitting around, or are you getting some extra ball drills in? Are you getting, you know, on the difference? Are you hitting the difference to work on your hand placement? It's like, how are you using every rep that you have throughout the year to better yourself? You're not doing anything half ass. You know, if you do thing half ass in the winter, it's not gonna transition and make you better on the field come the fall. You can't just turn it on and turn it off from that standpoint. It's a culture, and it's ingrained in your mind that you have to go hard throughout the year.
And that's why like you need to keep a healthy amount of friction on your team, like business and like football in that realm, because if you keep a highly competitive environment, whether again it's ping pong table, it's the yeah. practice reps, it's whatever, like if that high level of competitiveness like breeds that right amount of friction where you feel like you have to do more in order to maintain, and like that's how you start to kill complacency. Yeah. And like maybe complacency of Northwestern 2 years ago and then getting this new facility, like maybe that was just a little tinge and sprinkle of enough to let this drift start to happen. And because like I don't think they forgot how to win. I think there's like a couple different separators where maybe it's the quarterback, maybe it's some other things, but it's also like if the drift or the culture was perfect there, not perfect, but like as ingrained and fundamental as like a Patriots or an Alabama or an Ohio State, like maybe the gap isn't as big as
it's the next man up mentality.
Yeah, yeah,
and there's not a huge drop off like there.
And that's like yeah. now you get into military there, and like it's like that's life and death if you're not ready when your time's called.
Right,
and like you can't let hubris and like enter into or impede anything, because like that's where like, even though it's like a high stress environment, you should still have the vulnerability to be able to ask questions, understand your role, so that again, you don't get put in a scenario where you're not prepared. And like yeah. that makes sense. And just, I know time sensitive for you right now, but just to kind of wrap it up, want just real quick, if you could kind of compare and contrast Herbs and Tress, because I think Tress is an incredible coach too.
Love Tress, absolutely love Tress, but they cannot be more opposites from the standpoint of the way they run a program. You know, Tress is a guy that wants to form you as a young man. You know, he's a guy that wants to build you up and thinks that everything that you do off the field is going to transition to what you do on the field. He thinks, you know, if he can give you good a work ethic from doing your homework, making sure you're going to class, making sure you're doing the little things to build yourself as a person off the field, that's going to go on the field and it's going to transition. Whereas in Herb, it's almost the complete opposite. And the funny thing is, they both run amazing programs and both winning cultures. The difference is Urban is going to pound you on the field and get you to be the person of competitive excellence, everything that we've talked about, and expects that to go off the field. So then, you know, when you go into the classroom, when you are doing things, when you get put in certain situations on a Saturday night, what decision are you going to make? And he expects the kind of way that he's taught you to act on the field through his actions,
yeah, which,
to go off, right? So it's like complete polar opposites from that standpoint. And it's also, you know, even in the locker room, like Tress is the kind of guy of X's and O's. This is what we do. More of the, this is probably a bad way to put it, but like the paperwork, like X's and O's type thing. You know, this is our game plan on a piece of paper. Go do it.
Yeah, he's playing chess on the football field, but then he's like being a leader of men in general.
Correct.
And like, and I thought this is a cool comparison, just because Jesse played for Nick Saban, then he went and played for Pete Carroll, who very different humans.
Very different.
And like in that same capacity, there's more than one way to win. And I think everybody knows that to some extent. There's more than one way to skin a cat, but in that realm, like they're, neither of them are wrong either. You know,
no,
yeah,
no,
just
no.
Like
they're both so successful from that standpoint.
And that, but that's where like if you can be curious and like that's where like even in personal leadership, like find what works for you, ask questions about it, be self-aware, like be all these things, and then like apply. And like you got to like as a college athlete and even in business and stuff, you got to play the game. You got to appease the boss to some extent, but like. Like if you lead yourself, like then now.
But see, that's where I also think, and I could talk on this forever because this is actually where I spend a lot of time with my team on it. And it's funny that it's come back to this, is that in football, I think you can be Tressel or Urban, right? You can be the hard-nosed guy like Urban, and basically we're going to fucking kill him. And basically anytime you get into competitive excellence situation, we're going to win. On the flip side, Tress that I've already talked about, but when it comes to business, I think as a leader, you got to be both of them. You can't just be, this is the way I run my program and this, like, this is the way I live and die. Because when you're a leader in the business world, and I talk about this all the time with my team, you have to know your audience. You have to know who you're talking to. I've got a bunch of employees that are going to respond the way that Urban leads, and basically I'm going to ride your ass and it's going to be really hard, but I know you got it in you and you're going to succeed. Or I've got people that I have to do the Tress approach and like, hey, listen, we're going to sit down. These are my expectations. This and you know, this, yeah. More of a fatherly approach. And in the business world, you have to be able to go back and forth. The great leaders are the ones that know my leadership style isn't for everyone. It goes back to the hard coaching. You and I respond to hard coaching. There are a lot of people that don't respond to hard coaching. And so you need to know your audience. You need to know the person that you're working with, the person you're talking to, and how they're going to respond to something. Because the definition of what was it? Definition of insanity is doing something over and over again and getting the same result, yeah. Right? If I am trying to lead someone as a business leader and doing the same approach to them over and over again and getting the same result, at some point it's on me, not them. Yeah. At some point I have to be able to change my approach to make sure that they're getting the message. And then it goes to, okay, if I've exhausted everything and changed my way of trying to get them to understand and they still don't understand, then maybe they're the problem. But you can't keep on leading and doing things the same way, expecting the same result.
Yeah. And I think like in any realm, like adaptability is huge. And like, and if again, like some coaches are, it's like my way or the highway, but I do think some of the best coaches, like they have their style, but then like there's nuances where they'll have like the sidebar conversation. Yeah. And I've even had coaches, I think some of the better coaches, ask how you want to be coached and then, and apply it. And like, then you have your own messaging to the team and that kind of thing. But I think that again, it's just a self-awareness. And then like, even in that realm, if like people don't respond to your form of leadership, maybe you put somebody else in charge of them that they do respond to, and like that's just the power and like the ability.
But that's what good leaders do.
Yeah, and so I think that's a cool place to end. I know you got to get running, but appreciate you hopping on, and then everybody else, you'll hear more from Z here in the future, and then maybe we can sit down again and have like a extended convo. But you're the man, dude. Appreciate you.
No, man. Thanks for having me on. It's cool. It's cool what you do. Chasing edges, brother.
Boo, woo. Yeah. Where can people find you?
People can find me on Instagram, zborn44. Twitter's the same way. Or you can go to bornbrothers.com, and that's our business website.
Giddy up. And then what, you're still doing sports media stuff. Where do you show up there?
I am do stuff on the podcast. It's an outlet from Ohio State, covering a lot of Ohio State football. Thanks.
Right. Boom. So anybody Buckeyes, tune in. All right. Yeah. Appreciate you, brother.
Hey, everybody, thank you so much for tuning into the podcast. Hope you're getting a lot out of it, a lot of value, or at least some entertainment. But if you are enjoying and getting value out, please don't hesitate to like, subscribe, and review on all audio platforms, and then subscribe on YouTube. All of it would be greatly appreciated. All the support is massive. So thank you and be well.